This episode of the Driven Engineers podcast is sponsored by Sapphire Umbrella.
Welcome to this episode of the Driven Engineers podcast. I'm Matt Honor, and today we are talking with Dr. Kieran Reeves. Kieran is a mechanical engineer with a solid background in both motorsport and automotive education. He spent years in the industry and in the classroom, bringing a practical, hands-on approach to engineering that's helping shape the next generation of talent. In this episode, we'll chat about Kieran's journey from industry to education, his thoughts on the skills young engineers need, and what it's like to prepare students for the fast-paced world of motorsport. So, without further ado, let's welcome Dr. Kieran Reeves to the show. Hello, Kieran. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Nice to meet you, Matt.
Nice to meet you too. Obviously, I gave you a bit of a brief introduction there, but I think it's always good for our guests to introduce themselves. So if you wouldn't mind, if you could just tell us who you are and what you do.
Yep. So I'm Kieran Reeves, and I work at the National Motorsport Academy. So I first started the National Motorsport Academy 10 years ago now. We're just going into our 10-year anniversary. I'm the director of motorsport in that company. And pretty much run all the online programs, do all the admin, work with big staff, and I've got a full team of tutors.
Fantastic. Thanks for sharing that with us. What sparked your interest to start with? Right, if we go right back to the beginning and strip it right back, so what sparked your interest in more automotive and motorsport right at the beginning of your career?
So right back at the beginning, after leaving school, I went to do A-levels actually at first. And didn't like it. Just it was still too much like school for me. We had the sixth form local to me at the time. You still had to wear a school uniform, and it just wasn't really gelling with it after school. So I switched. I was always hands-on, always had motorbikes. My father always had motorbikes. So I've always been working and tinkering in the garage, etc. as a kid. So I moved across and got an apprenticeship instead and went to be a mechanic, which meant I could do day release for my apprenticeship to the local college, technical college instead. It's just something that's always driven me from a young age. So it felt right to go off and do that as a career.
Good. That's really good. And you touched on it briefly there, but you were, I think, a Vauxhall master technician for a while working within dealer network. So I can relate to that. I worked in car dealers for over 20 years before coming into my job in recruitment. Yeah. So I know what the long hours and what that industry feels like. What skills did you find most useful, though, being a master tech to help and aid with your career progression?
So at the time, when I was at Vauxhall, you kind of chose, after your apprenticeship, you chose a route of which way you wanted to go. So they're now called master techs at the time at Vauxhall. I'm not sure if it's still the same, but you were a bronze, silver, and then a gold technician. So I worked all the way up to gold technician standard. And I specialised in engines at the time and electronics. So obviously moving into motorsport eventually and being, I was quite successful going on a lot of the training courses with Vauxhall and for the new engines that were coming at the time, and you got a bit more in depth of how they were designed, not just repairing them. So that kind of piqued my interest, and following that across into the motorsport world was great. But being the technician on the electronic side and really getting involved in diagnosis and, sensors, actuators, ECUs at the time, that stood me in good stead for all the data analysis and logging that we do today.
That's good. That's great. And how did you make that transfer then from going from industry working on road cars to the motorsport side? How did you manage to find that transformation?
So the dealership I worked at the time, we were just transitioning out of also being a Lotus dealership as well. So we were dealing with Lotus cars, which kind of piques interest into motorsport anyway. But the principal who owned that dealership, he did a lot of rallying, and then he got into long distance rallying, Manchester to Bombay and things like that. So we built a Frontierer for him, obviously a Vauxhall at the time, into a rally car. We built two actually while we were there. Me and another guy really did it all, which got me into the motorsport world. But while I was at college on my day release, I got on really well with the tutors, and I completed my apprenticeship in kind of like half the time I should have done, really. It took me like, well, not maybe half, 2 years instead of three, really. They were really keen on me going to work there eventually. I wasn't sure when I first left college. I wanted to make sure I made my gold standard technician. Anyway, just as it happened, a few years on, or a couple of years on, I was getting a bit bored and stagnant, and I thought I wanted to really go in the world of motorsport. But at the same time, the college rang me up, and my old lecturer rang me up and said, do you fancy coming and teaching and giving it a go? So I was like, well, yeah, why not? I'm thinking of doing this, that, and the other. So I went across to the college and started there back in 2001 now. It was 2001 when I started there. Really, firstly, I went there to deliver the apprenticeships because I'd done it myself. So I was delivering all the day release programs to all the apprentices coming in at level two and level three. And then while I was there, we started looking at adding programs. So I picked up the national certificate and national diploma. We didn't deliver it at the time, at Excel, and then later on City and Guilds in motorsport. So I wrote all those programs for the college, and we started delivering a level two and a level three motorsport program. And then it made sense to, with my background as well, with some motorsport, was to move that on to degree level. So we started writing degrees after that.
Fantastic. That's great. And while we're on the subject of degrees, did I see you've done a PhD research in hybrid race vehicle energy management? That sounds a bit of a mouthful, but did I read that right?
Yeah, no, it's not bad. It's to be honest, I never remember the title fully myself because it's quite long, but the full title is Integrated Optimization for Dynamic Modeling, Path Planning and Energy Management in Hybrid Race Vehicles. And you can tell I've just ripped that off something because it's a long mouthful.
Tell me a little bit more about that then. What inspired you to choose that topic?
So I wanted to start working with hybrids of World Endurance. I really like World Endurance. Formula One use hybrids as well. And the World Endurance, the LMP1 cars and now the hypercars are hybrid vehicles. And it was starting to look like eventually as British touring cars brought it in, and some of the rally cars have gone electric. It was quite obvious that probably sooner rather than later, GT cars will go that way. And obviously, I run the full GT race team at the National Motorsport Academy. So it was time to kind of improve upon what I said earlier about just learning about engines and knowing internal combustion engines and design and development of them in quite detail. I needed to improve myself as well in the world of hybrids. And so I decided to go on a hybrid project. And with the university I was at, as it happened, my supervisor who I got placed with there, he was really involved in optimization and optimization algorithms. So we kind of came up together with a pathway in which I could use some of the algorithms or develop the algorithms he knew about and create them into my own algorithms and apply it to hybrid vehicles. And being in the motorsport industry, it made sense to apply it to obviously World Endurance. And then eventually what I worked out to do was kind of propose the GT car and how that would work if it went to a hybrid.
That's really interesting stuff. So I've got here that you worked on a race-winning engine package for GT Porsche. Can you tell us what made that project unique and what was it like working on such a project?
Yeah, so at the time, this was when I was back at the college and we're working quite a lot with a Porsche race team. And in GT racing, if you're kind of more at the national level GT events, there's like we're in GT Cup now and we run in the GT Open class, which the GTO class is called, but it's for GT Open. So the regulations are, you've got a lot more scope of what you can do. So this Porsche team I was working with asked about developing an engine for that class and to improve the power, because a lot of the rules and regulations now are based on a power to weight ratio. So you can add quite a lot of power from the standard homologated engines. So I went over, got involved with them guys, and actually started really from the ground up with the engine they had. But we started right back at the beginning with simulation. I use some industry standard software called GT Suite, specifically GT Power in there, which I'd been using all the time I was at college. I brought that into the college where I worked. So I'd used it quite a lot, been on a lot of courses. So we started really from ground up, and so I see where we can make improvements on that engine. So eventually, we looked at different flow and different head patterns and things and camshafts, and eventually created some really good power with it.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. So before you worked on the GT racing stuff, were you working on single-seater rally?
We were doing single-seat Formula Renault. So it was kind of a transition from rally into single-seat racing, which all of a sudden had wings and aerodynamics and everything else. And so that was quite a big transition and a change. Ultimately, when you're putting a setup on the car, it's very similar what you're doing practically to put the setup on the car, but the actual setups are massively different. And as you can imagine, we need very little travel in suspension, etc., than what you would do with a rally car. So yeah, it was a big change, but it was good and I enjoyed it, and that got me really focused on track racing from then forward.
That's really good. So you joined the National Motorsport Academy in 2015. What were your main goals when you joined the program? What did you set out to achieve?
Well, it is an interesting story. So I'd moved from the college and I'd moved to working at Staffordshire University, and I was in charge of all the motorsport programs there. And one day, a nice couple, Pauline and Kevin, I'll give them a shout out, they came in. So they owned a company called the National Design Academy, which did interior design online. But for many, many, many years, they've raced GT cars. So they came across to the motorsport area at Stafford, and we got chatting, and then eventually we ended up, cut a long story short, we ended up running Kevin's cars for him, which at the time was a Mosler, which we've still got to this day. We've just done a lot, big development on that, but we can get onto that later.
Awesome.
So, yeah, so we ran his car, and I was running that car for, I don't know, 12, 18 months, and just through chatting and everything else. And Kevin and Pauline said, do you think, because of what we've got with the online programs, and they were delivering to degree level, do you think it'd be possible to run a motorsport program online? And at first, probably like a lot of people thought when we first launched that show, it was like, no chance, it won't really work. You know, it's practical. How do you do a lot of the modules, etc.? So I kind of didn't really think much more of it. And then I went away and had a think about it for a while and thought, actually, there's a massive market for people who are working in motorsport who might not get that chance to go to university. They may now have family, mortgages, whatever it might be. Or because they're employed, they can't take the time off to go to university. So I think there's a real market there for people. So I went back and explained that and said, I think this is what we do. And if we're going to do it online, one of our entry requirements must be they're picking up practical experience in the workplace. And the NMA was launched. We kind of went to the Autosport show just to put some feelers out to see before we kind of pressed the button. And we were inundated with inquiries. It was crazy. So we decided to launch it. And then I started writing the programs and I moved from Stafford and the NMA was born.
Fantastic. And how many people have you had sign up in the time since 2015? Do you know roughly how many?
Well, thousands. We currently have. So when I was at Stafford, we used to have about 100 students per year across all levels on the program. Very similar when I was at the Blackpool College where I used to work. Now we currently have, at any given point, because we have a roll-on, roll-off program, so you can start every month. So at any one point, we're usually around 300 students. Across the year, we probably have between 400 and 500 unique names across a 12-month period. So, you know, we're up into the, we've, you know, 6, 7, 8,000 people now.
It's fantastic. And what's the success rate like in terms of passing and getting these degrees?
Good you asked, actually. I've just finished my annual monitoring reports.
Have you? Yeah, timing's right on that one.
Yeah. So it's usually each year it can just change slightly depending on what happens, and especially when we have the pandemic years. But this year we've just had 94% success. It's always in the 90s, very rarely drops below that. What we see with the way we deliver it and the kind of individuals who are applying, they're very focused and motivated for what they're doing. Anybody who makes it to the end of the program, usually people drop out midway because circumstances have changed or their employment's changed somewhere. Anyone who makes it to the end of the program tends to pass. So we're always around the 100% mark for success of people who complete the final module pass. But we do lose, obviously, 6 to 8% across the 3 years.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I think a small amount of attrition is always going to be a case. You mentioned two things there: motivation and dedication as well. And I think if you're going to be working in motorsport, they're probably two traits that you really need to have. So I think it sets you out in really good stead to to show what your capabilities are if you do end up working in motorsport. That's really good. How long are the courses and the degrees? If somebody was listening to this podcast and they had a little bit of an interest and they were thinking about signing up to it, could you just give us a little bit of background as to what they would be signing up to and what it looks like?
So we're classed as part time because we're not running at the speed of a university. But that said, they complete their 3-year program in 3 years, but 3 calendar years. So where everything's condensed at the university to 2 semesters, we don't close. We only close for 2 weeks at Christmas and New Year. So in 12 calendar months, they still complete a year's worth of university work like you would at university. It's just taken actual 11, 12 months of study rather than 6 or 7. So they still complete their BSc honours degree in 3 years, and then they can go on to a master's degree. We have a master's degree which is run at a normal part-time rate as per a university. So that is 2 years to top up to your master's.
You said that we recommend that you find maybe a role where you can do the practical and the hands-on stuff. What kind of things can people sign up to that would be feasible for this course?
So any form of motorsport is obviously ideal, but they can come racing with us as well. We have our own race team, so they can pick up additional practical elements. But normally we have people from grassroots all the way to top end F1, world endurance teams, etc. So anywhere in there in motorsport, anybody who's working for garages or main dealers, as long as they're getting the practical experience there, and then they can add on with our race team. But also we've got, the main thing is a lot of people slip into, I'm not working in a pit lane or I'm not doing this. But our degree goes all the way through from car design, obviously working in pit lane, and then development, design, R&D. So you might actually be working, designing or developing components in the motorsport industry. It doesn't necessarily mean you're at the pit lane or working on a car. So what we always say is to anybody who's thinking of coming onto the program, they're not quite sure. Our entry requirements are on our website, but actually just drop us a line and I'll gladly look at their CV for what qualifications they've got and what experience they're doing. And then we can kind of bespoke make the path into the program for them.
Really good. Did you see a spike in people taking these courses during the pandemic, or did you see a drop? I mean, a lot of people did revert to some kind of online learning. Yeah. So did you see a spike around that time?
Yes, we did. We did. We saw quite a lot of people sign up, especially with it being online and we were still open. We could work from anywhere, could or work from home or whatever. So, we saw quite a lot of people take it up during the pandemic.
Good, yeah. And in your role as an external examiner, how have you seen education programs change over the years?
Mainly with technology. So obviously each year you see, it depends where you go into examines. Colleges and universities can be vastly different depending on their funding or students they've got on program, etc. But it's in a big advance in technology, especially simulation and software. And as computing's got better and better, so you see a lot more simulation dropped in and using software into modules or assignments. Practical-wise, obviously, things are moving all the time. A lot of CAD, CNC used, etc. in the bigger universities. So it kind of just moves with the trends. And, of course, now there's a lot of the modules incorporate hybrid or electric vehicles.
Sure. Have we got time to take your view on what you think the future might look like in terms of hybrid or where we're going in terms of sustainability and things?
Yeah, I'm still in love with internal combustion engines, but I think biofuels is probably going to be the big shift again. I think you never know which way the government are going to go. They're trying to push the electric agenda at the minute, but I think at the same time, they're trying to be more green and trying to get the infrastructure, especially for road vehicles, trying to get the infrastructure together. And you can imagine all of a sudden if 10 million people want to plug in a car to charge at night time, how's the grid going to cope with that? And I think once they start realising that might not be the best way for now, I think more hybrid fuels should start coming in, synthetic fuels that we can use. Maybe even hydrogen, I think Toyota now have got a hydrogen engine, etc. So I think there's other alternatives than just electric until we can get a good infrastructure and also they can do kind of the distances without charging that a petrol or diesel car can do. They've kind of had a bit of a drop off lately and prices of, you know, second-hand markets not doing so well. So I just don't think we're quite there for them yet. But of course, with anything like that, motorsport kind of feeds the way, doesn't it? So F1 went that way a while ago. World Endurance have. And that technology eventually drops down and through the ranks. So we'll see.
I think you're right. And it's going to be interesting to see where I know the Chancellor in the budget recently put aside some more money for the automotive industry to back some of the battery manufacturing side in the UK. So it'd be interesting to see where they put that money in.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think it's also quite ethical to look at the cradle to the grave as well, which people kind of ignore at the minute, you know. Making batteries and mining for lithium, etc., isn't as ethical as everybody thinks or sustainable for the planet. So there's all these other things that people should look at and consider when going that route.
Absolutely. So looking back on your career then, I say it as if you're at the end of your career. I'm sure you've got many years left, Kieran. But looking back on your career so far, though, what experiences have had the biggest impact on where you are today?
Well, I think one of the there's always that element of luck, and I think one of them was just at the right time when I was getting slightly bored with being at the dealership, the Vauxhall dealership, because it was just the same thing every day. Eventually, you know, you've seen all the problems, you said, so it's getting a bit boring. So that phone call from the lecturer at that time and asking me to go in and teach, and you're not quite sure if that's something you want to do and if you'll be any good at it or anything like that. That's obviously a massive positive for me. It was just it was luck that I got the phone call, and it was great that I just went there and loved it and gelled. And obviously that place gave me the you know, the opportunity to write degree programs, the national certificate and national diploma programs firstly in motorsport, and just allow me then to do something I love with teaching, but also deliver something that I was already passionate about and working in from the motorsport side. So it was great, really. So that was the big positive. And then I've just gone, I don't want to say from strength to strength or blow my own trumpet, but it's been a great career up to now, where I've been heading, really. And it's just been making those correct decisions at the right time, I think. So yeah, moving to a university was the right time to do it. And then again, probably pure luck, Kevin and Pauline walked in that day and asked me to work on their car if I wanted to run their cars for them through the uni and then develop it into a business.
That's great. Do you want to talk a bit about the Mosler right now while we're on the subject?
Yeah, we can be. So we've got, just to put it out there, we've got three race cars. So we have the Evora, which ran at Le Mans in 2011.
Yeah.
It was basically Lotus built two cars for Le Mans. One of them, I think, had a wheel failure or something. It didn't finish the race anyway, and the other car did. We've got that car. Now, when we bought that car from Lotus, there was a real big spares package with it, including chassis, subframes, quite a lot of things. Because their plan was for this to be a 4 or 5 year, maybe 6 year project. And it got canned after the first year when Lotus got into financial difficulties or whatever happened. So we bought everything, which then allowed us to build a second car. But obviously the one from 2011 was still under the 2011 GTE regs, which wouldn't have coped in GTO nowadays. A modern GT3 car is a lot, lot faster than a GTE car from 2011. So we've had a massive electronics, engine and aero package development we've done on that car. And so we've got a second Evora now, which is doing really well. It kind of really only got finished where we were really happy with it this year. And we went out on the first weekend and we won two of the first four races on that weekend, and we came second in the other two. So it's getting there. It just needs a bit more dialing in and work on it. But also, aside from that, we've got the Mosler. So not many people probably know what one of them is, unless you're really hardcore into motorsport. But, again, we've done a lot of work with that. Kevin's had that car. I think he might have had that once before me. So this is his second Mosler. I think he got that one in about 2011 as well, actually, maybe 2012. And again, when we took it over and I started running it for him, he used to have a lot of problems with engines blowing up. He'd be going through 4 or 5 a week, a season. It runs an LS7 V8 Chevy. engine. So it was just, he was trying to get them developed for more power and more power over here. And it just wasn't really working. As it happened, just with luck, through some of my contacts, I knew a guy out in America who builds all the Rolex 24-hour engines and things. So he had a lot of knowledge on the engines. And in the end, we asked him to make us one. And now they run for 24 hours flat out before we even need a rebuild. So we've de-stroked it. So from a 7-litre, it's now a 6.3. But it actually allows us to make more power. It can rev better. And it's more reliable. So, we've just onto our second one of those engines, and they make really good power. But I've just completed now. I was on the dyno actually on Thursday, just gone. I've done a complete new electronics overhaul. So all the harnesses have gone, all the old ECUs, the power distribution units, everything. So we've just done a full ground up build with all new electronics. So it's pretty much running the same as what you'd see in like a LMP2 car kind of thing now, and Indy Lights and things. It's running a really high-end electronic system. We've just been on the dyno, like I say, we're looking at getting out to an airfield just to fine-tune some of the traction control and gearbox shifting, etc. Hopefully before the end of the year, if not, it'll be January, just depending on the weather. And then get some hardcore testing in before the season starts in April. Anyone who follows us, you will see the Mosler competing next year.
Fantastic. I look forward to seeing that. That sounds like a really interesting project. So you're currently Director of Motorsport at the National Motorsport Academy. We've touched on that already.
Yeah.
What does the day-to-day look like for you, Kieran? What does an average day look like for you at the Motorsport
Academy? Really boring. Meetings, and more meetings normally. So I don't do much teaching now. I still get involved in all the development and making sure all our programs are up to date. But I've got a really good team of engineers. All of my staff have also worked in motorsport, so they're all really high level and really good. So I can kind of leave them to the day-to-day teaching now, and I don't get involved too much of that. But yeah, really my main things are dealing with student complaints, if any ever came in. That's a very small part. We very rarely get any. Usually, it's like I said before, it's people who have got issues in their home life or work life, or something's happening and then we need to get involved to help them, how they can continue on the program, if we can give them a leave of absence so they can come back. So I deal with those kind of things, and working with student support, looking at financials, meetings with our partner at the university. So our program, we own the programs and the IP is ours, but it's rubber stamped by De Montfort University. So a lot of meetings with working with their kind of a partnerships team, etc. And then when I'm not doing all that kind of meetings, etc., I'm in the workshop still. I like getting my hands dirty, or like I've just said, developing that Mosler, and still doing a lot of development on the race car. And then aside from that as well, we have a lot of companies who ask to collaborate with us. So I kind of get involved with projects, with teams. I'm quite high end. I can't tell you some of them, but working with teams, you know, looking at modifying something or R&D, or even in bringing in a new product. So that's kind of, there's always sort of, I'm kind of jumping around every day, just making things kind of fit in. But yeah, typically it would be meetings in the morning and then working on projects or dealing with the university in the afternoon.
Good to hear that you're still hands-on. I don't think you can ever stop being hands-on when you've sort of gone, got your hands dirty and worked on a car before. I think it just stays with you, doesn't it?
Yeah, you've got to do it. When we go racing with the sort of, we take the students racing, and I'm the, I think that we call, for the race kind of series, I'm the team manager for title and chief engineer. So I could really just stand back, take the data, tell everybody else what to do and the staff, but no, I'll be led on the floor underneath the car and picking the spanners up. I still love it. So,
good. Have you got any particular success stories in mind that maybe one of your students has gone through one of your degrees but gone on to do something really big in motorsport?
Well, we've got quite a few now, because we basically have 7 of the 10 F1 teams. So all the teams that are based in the UK all have students on our program, or their employees on our program. So I can't tell you much about what they've done as dissertations, but we see, I could, rather than just give you one success story, I could probably easily pull out 20 or 30 dissertations both from World Endurance and from F1 that are really, really high level what they're doing, you know, to some extent where, which is great for us as tutors, we're almost learning off them with what they might be doing as a project in F1 at times. Obviously, they're all part of an NDA. You have to sign the NDAs. But yeah, a lot of people who've come that route and then excelled, done really good dissertations, done our masters, and then moved on into management, etc., within their departments in Formula One. So there's quite a few of that. We've got one student in particular who was working at F1, completed his masters, and he's now gone working for the FIA. So he's kind of a poacher come gamekeeper.
Right.
Yeah, so he knows all the ins and outs of what they used to do as teams, and now he's at the FIA.
Absolutely.
And he's working with the FIA in F1, so he's scrutinising each team and knows the tricks of the trade. So that's quite a good story.
I suppose it's good to have all those advocates around the team for you as well. So those people that can actually, they've lived and breathed your courses and they know exactly what you do and how you can support those students. So it's good having that many advocates around. And I hopefully anybody listening to this podcast can have a look at some of the courses that are available to them. Could you just let our listeners know where they can find more information about the Motorsport Academy?
So best place firstly really is to go direct to our website, which is motorsport.nda.ac.uk. As I'm sure you'll put it up somewhere on the podcast, but we're on all social media. So we tend to be on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. We have a LinkedIn page, so LinkedIn's nice to go on there if you want to go on LinkedIn.
Thank you for that. Kieran, I really appreciate you taking the time today to give us an insight to your career, but also giving us loads of information there about the National Motorsport Academy. Just want to thank you, and I'd love to stay in touch, and hopefully we could have you on again in the future to talk about some of the new projects.
This episode of the Driven Engineers podcast is sponsored by Sapphire Umbrella.